Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Aha!
Done!
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
In no way, you big spastic, you're a mentalist! Damn!
Thank God, that was the noise.
Monkey tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Monkey tennis?
Minor criticism, more distance between the eggs and the beans.
Monkey tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
You're a packing.
Basically, beef tea.
Yeah.
Are you on an E?
Monkey tennis?
Can I have a glass of water, please?
Hello, friends, and welcome once again to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Here we are for Series 8. Jesus Christ. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
There is broad agreement that John was good.
Nick Alder.
There's more peas in that than a Pampers pen...
And Tom Stab.
That was good egg.
Fluff the first intro of the series. Unbelievable.
Slick as ever. Nothing's changed.
So as you should know from our social media, etc., we're going to be moving on to tackle Nomad, one of the few major Partridge properties that we're yet to get into. But first, we wanted to round up some of your feedback about our previous series on this time, and also on some other bits and pieces. So this week and next, we'll be rifling through the drawers of feedback that we've had from you since January. Starting with, before we get onto feedback, a news flash at the time of recording, which my colleague Tom Dark will tell you more about.
This is news that quite literally dropped yesterday. So in our new regular feature, This Week in Alan, brackets, would have happened months ago by the time you hear this, close brackets, Steve Coogan has just escaped a lengthy driving ban after successfully arguing that a new series featuring his Alan Partridge character could not be filmed on public transport. The comedian was clocked driving his Porsche at 36 miles an hour in a 30 zone close to his mansion in East Sussex, earning a 3-point endorsement on his driving licence. Because he already had 9 points from previous offences, he faced an automatic 6-month ban. Coogan told the court that in the series, which is due to film in October, Partridge drives to various locations around Britain meeting people. And this is a Coogan quote. I'm producing a travelogue follow-on TV series where I'm basically driving around Britain. The whole nature of this series is that it is a travelogue and it's an artistic thing that he drives and defines his character. The actor argued that the Partridge character, who in one series drove barefoot to Dundee after gorging on Toblerone and owned a Lexus, as he described as the Japanese Mercedes, was inherently wedded to the road. Coogan continued, you can't put him on a train because that's not what he is. It's part of his character that he drives. I'm also appreciating this is from The Guardian, and the fact they went into the Toblerone driving barefoot to Dundee detail in reporting this story is very good. Coogan told the court camera shots could not be faked. You have cameras mounted on the bonnet. Then you have other shots where you have a camera mounted on a separate car filming the person in the car driving. He said the Baby Cow production company has lined up between 15 and 20 staff to work on the series, and they would struggle to find alternative work if cancelled at short notice. Coogan admitted his driving record was not good. I really love this bit.
Can I shock you? It's not great.
He said he'd taken steps to change his behaviour. This is a great quote. I'm trying to slow down and I try to observe the average speed limits that have come in. I tend to drive the car with automatic cruise control that will help me keep within the speed limits. So he really is trying, guys.
That is that last quote sounds very Alan, doesn't it? You could really imagine Alan saying that. I have a couple of thoughts on this. One, to take a step back, this is a bit of a reveal, isn't it? Because we didn't know that it was going to be a travelogue series. What we understood was that it was going to be a documentary series of some kind, but
some kind of history series.
I believe it was going to be historical. Maybe it still is, but...
Yeah. So I guess this is a bit of a leak in that respect, or this has come out as a result of this. Now, did he have to say that in the court?
Well, I have a bit of a cynical conspiracy theory on this. Is this without checking the records, they could have just made this up and basically farmed the story out to kind of leak a bit of Partridge series.
I don't think so. If you're getting courts involved, I think it's a very...
I also think The Guardian is not going to get caught out, I would hope, is not going to get caught out reporting on a court case that never...
But I do think the way I've seen this evolve over the last 24 hours or so, it looked like the Enemy was the first place to actually report the story.
Yes, yeah.
And then all the other news outlets have essentially copied and pasted what the Enemy had.
I mean, if that is the case, I would say it's not necessarily been seen as a positive thing, though. A lot of people have been, you know, at work, been coming up to me and chatting about it, and, you know, as a Partridge expert...
Why would they talk to you about
it? Because I'm the go-to. Not everyone.
And you referred them to us.
Yeah. I was like, guys, help me out. Not everyone thinks it's a positive.
My favourite thing about this story is that it's somewhat ironic that Steve is in a situation here where the prospect of his driving being pared back, he's trying to avoid that by saying it's going to affect the staff of his production company.
Yes.
Now, we've been in familiar territory before in I'm Alan Partridge, Alan having to make a tough choice between downgrading his vehicle or losing all the staff of Pear Tree. But this is sort of the inverse of that situation that Steve's saying, you know, jobs are on the line. Yeah. You must let me drive. Driving must go on.
It's like the idea of his production staff are in the boardroom. He's locked them in and said, sorry, guys, not going to do the driving series. I've got a court ban. Didn't have the guts to say that, and he just leaves out the fire escape.
I mean, there are also a couple of other things. It's like, why couldn't that ban have been deferred until after the series?
No. He was very clear because they couldn't get any other staff that would have been compromised.
No, until the series was finished. Like, the series was done.
But then you're going to prison.
Yeah, it's deferred until after the filming. Why couldn't they have done that?
Would they ever do something like that, though? Is that not too lenient?
Letting him off the ban because he's got work to do seems a bit lenient, doesn't it?
And also, like, if you were to put your cynical cap on again, you could say that he was using that as an excuse in order to try and get out of it. We don't know. And also, things like... Can you not fake driving? Like,
I mean,
they often put cars on those kind of trucks
that have like a flat bed, and then you drive around.
I think it probably could. Maybe not within the BBC's budget for the series.
That's the only detail that made me think this might not be a true court case. Is just the fact that he's just been let off because he's got work to do, and some people's livelihoods depend on it.
But also just the specifics of that quote. The whole nature of the series is that it's a travelogue and it's an artistic thing that he drives to find his character. I'm basically driving around Britain meeting people. That's like, he doesn't need to explain it. And he'd only have to say, well, there are technical limitations on how this works. He wouldn't have to explain the plot devices.
Everything we've said is allegedly, all we can do here is report the facts.
That's what we're doing.
I can believe that if driving at 36 in a 30 zone was the straw that would break the camel's back, that there could be mitigating circumstances like, this is integral to my earnings. I'm not a legal expert,
remember, it's a mansion in East Sussex.
And also, that ties into my next point, is that there are a lot of people on Twitter slagging him off, going, why is he driving anywhere? He's loaded, why can't he have a driver? I'm like, what? One, that's his choice whether he wants to drive
to
or not.
Yeah.
He's obviously, like, we know he's a bit of a petrol head. He loves cars. Like, he has a right to drive a car. Just because you're loaded doesn't mean you have a driver. And those people just, like, criticising him for that are clear.
Two words, Prince Philip.
Yeah.
But I also love the fact that it turns out the next Alan series we're probably going to get consists around Coogan driving because, like you say, he is a petrol head. So I've just gone, guys, I know we've been thinking about this history show, but here's a better idea.
I know I've worked on a series where I've gone, look, can we go to Italy? Look, can we go to Greece? Look,
yeah.
Can we
go around with me driving the whole time?
I've got another idea for you. How am I doing all of that, but as Alan?
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing, doesn't he?
Do you think he'll have a poke at the courts or the legal system as Alan Partridge, as a kind of like veiled, kind of got away with it kind of
quite
thing?
Quite possibly, but I mean, he kind of already did it in that segment in this time where he got pulled over for erratic driving, didn't he? And then he had that body double.
Vin Diesel.
Another thing I like, somebody tweeted us, I'm afraid I can't remember your name, sorry, but somebody said, actually, it would be a great series to see Alan forced to have a driving ban of his own and then basically be forced onto public transport and have to interact with the smelly man on the bus and, you know, doling out your change, dealing with the sort of the travel card system, etc.
That would be
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I would as well. Well, it's filming in October, I believe, so... I think that's what the report said, so he's still got time to worm it in somehow.
By the time you're listening to this episode, keep an eye out your window. Coogan could be driving past.
One other thing that came about from us posting about this as well, I think, Tom, you posted on the Monkey Tennis Twitter page the gif of Alan when he's crashing in a car with the "Into me!"
It's from the credits of one of the episodes of series two of I'm Alan Partridge. Yeah.
And somebody commented on our Twitter, again, sorry, I can't actually find your actual tweet, but if you actually look back at that segment, it looks like the kind of, essentially the chalk dust that is supposed to be emitted when an airbag is deployed. When you actually look at it in slow-mo in the GIF, it's very clearly coming from outside the car, which is just a nice little spot that we hadn't picked up on before.
And someone's just powdering Steve.
Yeah. I can't remember what the episode title is, but it's
the first time, I imagine.
Allegedly. it's the episode with Crash Bang Wallop, What a Video, isn't it? Because then it's when the credits roll at the end, it's the slow motion of him being smashed in the face with an airbag.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to cover some This Time with Alan Partridge feedback that we've had from our listeners. So I'm going to rattle through them. We had loads, so thank you to everyone that submitted their feedback. So
we kind of asked people what they thought of the series overall now they've had a bit of time to live with it, didn't we?
Yeah, and I'm just going to share their views.
Do that.
Okay, I will. I'm going to start with Peter Norris, who says, "Loved it. I lasagna with it regularly." I think that's a lovely sentiment of someone sitting around with a lasagna watching This Time with Alan Partridge.
Keen to do that as well.
Absolutely. Peter Millett says, "I enjoy the evolution of Alan. Anything they do is great. Sure, the early stuff can't be topped. There's no point in trying. I appreciate the different directions they're taking." So... wise words from Peter.
Kind of mixed messages. There's no point in trying.
I was listening back to one of the old episodes just to check sort of what we talked about. And I think there's definitely stuff. We made the point about there's definitely stuff in this time that is on par with the original Alan material. Like, it doesn't always hit, but when it does hit, it's as good as the stuff back in the day, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it seems what Peter Millett is saying is effectively, "Oh, this breakfast looks disgusting. Still might as well eat it."
John Richards says, "I rewatched it a few times and enjoy it, but the last two episodes were really weak. I think the main issue is that they're trying to parody a show that is almost a joke in itself anyway. The half-hour format was always going to be tough to fill with constant jokes, which is why I find Mid-Morning Matters is the Partridge sweet spot."
That's quite a fair point. Like, the one show is ridiculous if you've ever watched it from start to finish.
I mean, I've never watched it. It looks dreadful. Adrian Bavister says, "Initially had mixed feelings. It made me laugh, but definitely was not as good as previous Alan output. I wonder if it was watered down for a mainstream BBC One audience. Mid-Morning Matters is a favourite of the hardcore fan, and something like that just didn't work."
I think it's our understanding that that the writers say that they didn't make any compromises for BBC One. They didn't consciously dumb anything down. No. So I think, you know, maybe it's a subconscious thing, or maybe Adrian is just mistaken.
If anything, they dumb up.
Quentin Soldan says, "Hugely disappointed. I think this should be the last we see of AP."
Ooh.
Big. "This is what could have happened if Fawlty Towers had come back for a 13th episode. Even Alpha Papa was a 6 out of 10 for me, and I'm AP's biggest fan. Very sad, but time to leave AP behind."
I would argue if you're AP's biggest fan, you would probably love everything regardless. Surely, if you don't like this and someone else does, does that not make them a bigger AP fan than you?
Also, he's gone from Alpha Papa to this time and not mentioned Mid-Morning Matters in between or any of the specials, which I think there's some real gold in there. So I don't know if he's seen those. He may have.
He might not have a Sky subscription, to be fair, and he shouldn't be judged for that.
You can find them on the internet. But yeah, it is interesting that I think Mid-Morning Matters, what we're kind of picking up in this feedback, it is very much a hardcore fan favourite.
Yeah. Mm.
And going, even Alpha Papa was a 6 out of 10, it's like, yeah, I think we'd all agree. Yeah, 6 out of 10. That's definitely not a surprise.
Even in the commentary, they admit, yeah, this bit wasn't very good, was it?
Lee Kinch says, the best way to describe it for me was not enough scripted off script and too much scripted script. Got that first time. didn't work for me. And the only bits that were funny was when Alan was winging it. I'm not entirely sure I agree with that, but fair enough. Everyone's entitled to an opinion.
I'd agree that I'd like to have seen more of the stuff that wasn't supposed to be broadcast on the BBC. So more of the kind of in between the behind the scenes stuff. And we've seen that from a few people as well. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's perhaps unduly harsh of the thing as a whole.
I would agree to be fair, but it's definitely fair to say that not everyone has universally loved it. So onwards, Ian Doody says, it tried too hard and then failed to be actually funny. They need a rethink, or dare I say, kill Alan off. I mean,
very controversial.
Yeah. I mean, I can appreciate that it's not for everyone, but I certainly don't agree with anyone advocating killing and getting rid of Alan.
I'd be keen to know what a rethink actually means in that context as well.
Yeah.
Do you think when they get to the end of where they think they can take Alan, that they will actually kill him off? Or do you think they'd never do anything that definitive? Because surely there's always, you know, there's potentially new writers, you know, the writing team's changed since the beginning. I feel like they'd always leave it open. I mean, they didn't, you know, they haven't even decisively killed Michael off.
Yeah, I mean, it. I guess it's such a unique proposition because I don't think there is any other kind of comedy character that has gone from these different writing camps and still been consistently good as well. So yeah, I think if they were to ever kill him off, then like, yeah, why would they do that? Because I think there's always going to be scope to do something.
I don't think Steve would kill that character off because, you know, it's a bit of a cash cow for him, and it allows him to do the kind of, you know, one for me, one for you kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And what happens if you get a, you know, a parking fine?
Yeah, exactly.
Kristen Taylor said, loved it. Lots of classic moments. We'll never be able to visit a train toilet again without thinking paper, paper, paper.
Great point.
Nigel Christian writes, I want more Armando Iannucci Partridge. Sure, it was catchphrase comedy at times, but it was fast-paced, laugh after laugh. Alan was easy to laugh at, and in the next moment, laugh at someone else. I miss that Alan most of all.
I definitely think that there are, given the nature of what this time was, it was a live TV broadcast. There was lots of stuff that was really fast paced. There was a lot of stuff that was really like fast gag after gag after gag. And like we said, not all of them hit, but to say that this time wasn't fast paced, I think is not accurate.
You know, that's just reminded me. I was listening to a podcast with Carrie Ad Lloyd the other day. So she was the actress that was Alice Fluck. Whichever one, I can't remember.
You've done it again.
But she was saying that so many jokes were cut live during the recording. They'd just be like Coogan and the Gibbons just going, okay, just get rid of that, let's go with that one. And she said she was sat there just going, this is all such comedy gold, I can't believe they're just like discarding so much good stuff. So it'd be really interesting to see what those original scripts were like, because I think there were a lot more gags in there as well.
Estelle Coombe says, I can't tell you the amount of times I've watched Irish Alan. Tell you what, it's 9,500 times. Very, very good, very good. Other than that, I've not revisited it at all. I love Nomad, though, and...
Who the hell is that?
You just had to say that.
I'm a big fan of the next name on the list that you're going to read out.
I mean, I was going to skip it, to be honest.
No, you have to read that out.
Okay, fine. We've had a message in from someone, I assume this is their name, Titty McSchwarzenegger says, definitely stands up to a rewatch for picking up on the amazing Steve Coogan facial expressions. Katie Wick's appearance was hands down the best bit for me. Surprised you didn't pick up on it more on the podcast. Her sleep doctor character had me shrieking.
I think the only reason we perhaps didn't give Katie Wick her due as a great guest is that, well, I certainly had already watched her in Stafflet's Flats, and for me, her performance in that is so much more of a barnstormer that she almost felt kind of quite muted by comparison in this. I mean, she was very good. Her sort of her kind of slightly odd creepiness. The kind of, they've obviously thought a bit about what sort of person would it take that their dream career would be in a sleep clinic, like creepily watching people. But yeah, I don't know. I think she's a brilliant comic actress, but I prefer seeing her in Stafflet's Flats, second series of which will have just been on Channel 4 by the time you hear this.
I think also we were going into so much detail into so many things when we were doing this time. We just didn't have time to cover everything without releasing 2 hour episodes, which I think we can all agree nobody wants.
Yes.
Least of all producer Jed.
Indeed. And lastly, from Paulie G, I've rewatched it, caught a few of the subtler gags and did enjoy it the second time round, but didn't laugh at all. And it's lacking quotability. Overall, 7/10. Let's make I'm Alan Partridge season 3. So very, very good.
Never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Never going to happen.
Exactly. Can I just add my own personal favourite from this list of responses from Chaz Newkey Burden, who just said, better than nothing.
And that is just a selection of the messages that have come in. So thank you to everyone that shared their thoughts. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick. So James Denton has been in touch on Twitter with a theory that he tells us to strap ourselves in for. So this should be good. He says, I know you all have a penchant for Partridge theories, and with new AP on the horizon, I thought now is as good a time as any to tell you about my theory. I'm from a small town in North Wales. My uncle grew up and was best friends throughout school with a man called Martin Murray. The name may ring a bell with you. Thank you.
Very good.
When Martin went to university, he became big friends with Steve Coogan and remains so to this day. Martin has featured in various Coogan works, most notably as the photographer in Alpha Papa, who snaps Alan when he tucks his balls and nuts between his legs. He's also mentioned in Nomad. Actually, Alan says in the section about the siege, was snapped from behind by Martin Murray, a slime ball photographer who probably beats off to these images in a dark room.
And then, so that's the real person's name being applied to the character.
Well, he's referred to him as Murray Martin, so he's just swapped the names around.
So he has, my mistake. He says Murray Martin in Nomad. But I think eagle-eyed people could probably work out what he's done there.
We barely did.
I barely,
didn't.
I didn't,
even when it was literally spelled out for you.
Now the paths of Steve Coogan and my uncle crossed when Steve visited Martin during the holidays from university. The trio went out on the lash a few times. Steve Coogan may have also become aware of my dad. Not sure if they met, but I imagine he'd have been brought up in conversation and discussed possibly. I mean, he's making quite a lot of assumptions there. This is where it gets interesting. My dad's sense of humour isn't a great deal different to that of a certain psychic Simon Denton. And my dad's name... Why, Simon Denton, of course.
What?
Is Sidekick Simon based on my father? I wouldn't like to say, but yes, probably. I saw Martin some months ago and meant to ask him if he'd asked the great man about my theory or if he had any knowledge of it, but I forgot. I also don't want to get my hopes and dreams dashed. All the best, James. So, yeah, what a great theory that Simon Denton is based on James Denton's dad.
To get to the bottom of it, James should go in on a long walk to find out if any of this is true and document it in about 300 words. Or 300 pages, even.
Perhaps in the footsteps of his father.
Exactly, yeah.
Walking about 160 miles, maybe with a detour around London.
There we go. So thanks for that, James, and thanks, Tom. I've got a Les Dawson bombshell.
Finally. It's what we're all here for.
Cold Spring got in touch on email. Didn't realise that inanimate bodies of water could contact us, but more than happy.
They really can.
We talked a bit about, in this time, Alan would read out tweets of jokes. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's a segment when we're at the Digiwall and they're going through... quite kind of un-PC jokes.
That's right, yeah. So Cold Spring emailed us to say that those jokes that they put out were all genuine Les Dawson jokes, which is a lovely touch, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's something that definitely passed us by because I guess we're not connoisseurs of the work of Les Dawson.
Sadly not. But as a second point, they also said, why are there 3 Cresswells in the APU, Alan Partridge universe? Jason, the Smile FM boss, Single Hand Sue.
Do they mean shape?
I think so, yeah. Single Hand Sue, the Bravery Award one, and I've forgotten the other one. Bye. So obviously we've looked into this and we've discussed the various Cresswells and Tresswells across our episodes. We believe there aren't 3, there's 1 Tresswell and possibly 2 Cresswells. So you've got Jason Tresswell, the shape boss, as seen in Alpha Papa, Susan Cresswell, So Ruddy Brave, Norfolk Bravery Awards, I'm Alan Partridge. The point is 4 years later, she's credit controller at Cromwell Certificated Bailiffs. And then...
Yeah, so the link to that is then in Mid-Morning Matters, you have this line where Alan says, I know there's more than one Cromwell, there's dozens of Cromwells, just look in the phone book. I've got a friend called Cromwell, actually he's called Cresswell, meant to call him back. And I thought that was quite weird that you have this Cresswell-Cromwell kind of crossover thing. Like, is that deliberate or is it an accident? It just seems quite weird.
It's odd. I don't have an answer. I was clutching for something to say, but it's...
You were making notes.
I was making notes. happy to agree to... That's odd, right?
So you were making notes, but not notes on what we're talking about.
No. I was making notes on Thomas, Woody's comment on Facebook, and he wrote, my mate Connor, 30, always thought Alan said in Series 2, Episode 1, that's what Nancy Walker, a.k.a. Nazi war criminals, said. So he's essentially misheard what Alan was saying. So this is his friend Connor who's misheard things. And he goes on to say he's an avid fan. He's never lived it down to this day. So if Connor, 30, who lives in Panama, could get a shout out to Nancy Walker, that would be fantastic.
This reminds me of a joke that came up in my secondary school 20 years ago where somebody trying to look cool, claiming that they knew all about fags, mispronounced the brand Embassy as M and C and then literally never heard it down for the rest of the school year.
Was that you?
No, it's me. It's like, oh mate, you pop into the shop, yeah, do you want anything, yeah, can I get Panda Pops and 20 M and C, you know.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, can anyone think of any other misheard Alan at all? Does anything else spring to mind apart from things like the Tresswell-Cresswell combination?
Oh, Dracula's house.
Yeah. Nesquil. Things that he's mispronounced.
Oh
yeah,
sorry.
No, are there any lines where you've misunderstood what it was or anything like that? Nothing springs to mind at the moment, but I think that might be a good one to put out to you, dear listener. If you or any of your friends have misheard any Alan lines, then please do get in touch.
We will, of course, furnish you with all the details of our social media and the Monkey Tennis hotline at the end of the episode.
We've had another comment on Facebook. People still use Facebook, apparently. Interesting.
They do. So they really do.
Matthew,
the page is very busy with loads of Alan fans just getting together, having great chat about everything
pop,
I love
pop,
about
pop, 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 lots of posts. Yeah.
Staggering. Absolutely staggering. Matthew Salmon writes, not sure if you've picked up on this already, but like Alan in Mid-Morning Matters, Steve mentions having a dog called Barney in his autobiography. We notice this?
Yes, we spoke about it because I mentioned that I also had a dog named Barney when I was growing up.
And I think, was it, they buried it in the front garden of the house or something like that?
No, that was my mum and dad.
You buried your mum and dad in the front garden of the house?
I think you'll find that was Coogan too.
Okay, yeah. Actually, no, sorry, my mum and dad buried it in the back garden.
Also, if you have done that, just call Steve and get his lawyer on the case. He'll be able to get you off.
R.I.P. Barney.
So Matthew goes on to write, I probably should have included where this is referenced in Mid-Morning Matters. What a Dilbert. It's in the Agony Aunt section of Series 1 near the underwater crying part, if you want to go look that up.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kieran Parr's been in touch on Facebook, another Facebook user there for you, Nick. He says, guys, I wrote to Jim Will Fix It asking to wash an elephant. Now, this is in reference to something that we discussed on a previous episode of the podcast, I believe. Nick, a friend of yours wrote in with a similar request.
My friend Peter Carrington, or unless he's rebadged himself as Kieran Parr, also wrote into Jim Will Fix It to wash an elephant. I mean, if you have one wish, why would it be that?
I feel like, was that just a popular thing in the 80s for some reason?
I mean, they could have got a budget deal on that. They just send them all the people that want to wash an elephant along, and then just film the most photogenic.
It's just not a thing, is it? Washing an elephant or white dog poo. It's just a thing from the 80s that should be left there.
Kieran Parr, if you want to send us a follow-up message saying to us why you wrote into Jim Will Fix It asking to wash an elephant, please go ahead. You carry on and say, I never got a reply, but I'm glad of that now. I don't know. I wonder why. I don't know why I wanted to wash an elephant, but I think maybe it was on Blue Peter. Needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Maybe Blue Peter.
Idea for a show. So Jimmy Savile washes animals, must be properly policed / safeguarded. I also have a clue that he doesn't care if they are dead or alive. Wow, that took a dark turn, didn't it?
And just to be clear, he is no longer a sir. Just I want to make clear, he shouldn't be. We shouldn't be calling him a sir.
Yeah, that took a bit of a dark turn. Wasn't expecting that. Plot twist of the year.
And would that show get commissioned?
By Monkey Tennis Productions, yes.
Was not expecting that.
A huge thanks to One Sided Swedge on Twitter, who has seemingly concocted an entire set of rules for Partridge Monopoly. We talked about this on a previous episode, came up with a few ideas for properties and squares and various bits and pieces. So here we go. Here are a couple of the things that One Sided Swedge came up with for the Monopoly game. Sack Lynn for being unloyal / disloyal, collect £50. Sued by Glenn Ponder, pay £50. Sue Cook has pulled out, lose a turn, miss a turn. Needless to say, you had the last laugh, collect £20 from each player. Inner City Sumo has been commissioned by Sky, collect £30. And trapped under a cow, lose a turn. Plenty more. What else have we got?
Someone steals your door, lose a turn.
Brilliant.
A monkey has eaten all your fags, pay £20. These are sex people, lose a turn. Accidentally shoot a man through the heart, lose a turn. I think that should be game over, shouldn't it, really?
Yeah. That's the end.
At least go to jail.
Yeah. Well, Alan didn't, so.
Yeah. You've got a brilliant lawyer, don't go to jail.
Spend bank holiday with Sean Connery, collect £200. Chunky Norwich FC win the league, take an extra turn. Pierce foot on a spike, lose a turn. Mother's money has come through, collect £50. Tell Dave Clifton to fuck off on air, take another turn.
So good. Nick, what you got? What
there's
you
also
like?
Some, there's some brilliant locations. So instead of the old Kent Road, you've got the static home. Instead of the Angel Islington, Lynn's dead mum's bed.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally so many. You've got Lynn's Baptist Church. My favourite is Tandy, would be keen to visit. Jeb Maxwell's house. Long Stanton Spice Museum, of course, the BP Garage and Pear Tree Productions.
And a couple of other highlights here. Wank off tramps, plural, lose a turn. Wife has run off with narcissistic sports pimp. Easy for me to say, pay £50. Tony Hayes is dead, advanced to Owl Sanctuary. Your PA spills Sunny Delight all over your Bond videos, pay £9,500.
Very good.
A couple of other things that I really liked. The stations are Disappointment, Shattered Dreams Parkway,
yes.
Backstabbing Central and Rejection. The utilities are Radio Norwich and North North Digital. And just lastly, to finish this off, and this is all absolute gold, by the way. The suggestions for tokens are Cook Pass Babtridge Car, Cup of Beans, Toblerone, Canal Boat, London Bear, Shop Soil Chocolate Orange, British Isles Breakfast, Framed Photo of David Copperfield, Handmade for Sausages and a Beef Burger, and a Traffic Cone.
Would commission,
there
would play, would read out on the podcast. Thank you very much to One Sided Swedge on
really
Twitter.
Good, really good.
Excellent.
Time for a tweet now that we had a while ago whilst this time was on air. Chris Wood brought this to our attention on Twitter, and this is actually a tweet from Owen Norris, who writes, "One of the first things I did when joining Top Gear 14 years ago was to find the original review of the 1997 Renault Megane, and lo and behold, there it was in all its glory, word for word." I'm going to read out the specifics of the review here. "With a mere 90 brake horsepower available, progress is too leisurely to be called death-defying, but on the motorway in fifth gear, the Megane's slow pace really becomes a pain. Uphill runs become power-sappingly mundane, whilst overtaking National Express coaches can become a long, drawn-out affair." How brilliant is that? That is a genuine Top Gear review.
I do love that. I would say, though, he does claim that it's word-for-word, and I think it's not an exact word-for-word.
Over to Pedant's Corner with Adam Brooks.
I've got to be honest, I haven't checked, and I'm fully prepared to be corrected.
I'm confident. And death-defying is not
yes,
in there.
Yes, I don't think it's as death-defying, and I think when it says on the motorway in fifth gear, the Megane's slow pace really becomes a pain, I don't think it says pain.
I think it's apparent or a pain, yeah, he says. Yeah. I'm not sure which.
But I mean, it's certainly been lifted from this, hasn't it?
Oh,
which
yeah,
is
yeah,
it's
yeah,
very impressive to have found that. Well done.
I would also add my mum had a Megane, so yeah.
Did she ever overtake National Express coaches in it?
She did, but it became a bit of a long, drawn-out affair.
Very good.
Your dad must have been upset.
Yeah. I've had another message.
You personally, just you.
Yeah. On Facebook.
Yeah, this one's coming from Andrew Philpott on Facebook.
Never mind your Facebook messages.
He writes, "In mid-more Matt, we know / learn of Alan's once secret sponsorship deal with Range Rover, and therefore continuing with my theme when I write to you. Alan is back buying British after his short sojourn, like a foray, after Rover to Lexi and back to British. Couple this with your recent and relevant comment of his general dislike of both American and European things, Lexus being Japanese, close brackets. It further reinforces two things. One, he does prefer British cars." Turning the page here.
Paper.
"And two, I would hereby now like to declare myself as, open brackets, arguably, close brackets, the world's leading authority on the cars of Alan Partridge, 1997 to 2016.
Can he can make that official if he likes him, put it in his Twitter bio.
Yeah,
whatever,
yeah, go
he wants
for it. I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Sanctioned by us until someone else gets in touch with better car intel.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not
God.
Sure it will ever happen.
The floodgates are open.
We've been bombarded with Facebook messages. The next one is from Aidan Wright, I should say. He says, "Unfortunately, Bob Holness is not with us, although Bill Withers is still with us." Now, this message was sent to us on the 18th of October, 2018, so we're nice and up to date with
that. We've been collating these for quite a while,
haven't we? And at the time of writing, Bill Withers is still with us. Now, I'm just quickly going to check.
We're going live
on the internet.
Can anyone explain why Aidan's referred to Bob Holness here? Is this something we talked about previously on the pod? Or
I think maybe he messaged on the day or in and around the time when we lost Bob Holness. Checking.
Should we fact check that as well?
You fact check that. This was sent on the 18th of October. So today, which is the something of August?
15th of August,
thank you. Bill Withers is still with us.
Bob Holness died in 2012, so...
Sometimes the letters will be false.
Can I say for the record, we're laughing at our own ineptitude rather than the death of Bob Holness.
This is really bad. I genuinely can't remember what that's in reference. Did we talk about it? Is he referencing Mid-Morning Matters or something like that?
I genuinely can't remember. I'm sure we're going to get bombarded, aren't we?
Anyway, the main point is, Tom, is Bill Withers still with us?
Bill Withers is still with us.
A lovely day.
It's always a lovely day when Bill Withers is still with us.
So, at time of going press, he is 81 years
going
old.
Going press.
Yeah.
that well-known phrase.
That is a phrase.
At time of going press, Bill Withers is still with us, but Tom Stabbs had a stroke.
That is a phrase.
Going to press.
Yeah, surely it's going to press.
And on that bombshell...
We're going to press the stop record button.
Watertight, fact-checked bombshell. It's the end of this first of two very special feedback episodes from Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Of course, we'd be remiss of reading out all this feedback without telling you how you can get in touch. And you can via the following methods. ThePartridgePod@gmail.com is our email address. Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. On Twitter, it's @ThePartridgePod. On Instagram, it's @MonkeyTennisPod. And the Monkey Tennis hotline is reopened, 07923 600 017. Give us something fun to listen to, and you might hear it on a future episode. So we'll be delving delving into more of your feedback next week. But from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, it's wonderful to be back. Thank you for listening. Thanks and goodbye.
See ya. A lovely day.
Aha! Dan, back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
In no way, you big spastic, you're a mentalist! Dan!
Don't, no, that was the noise.
Monkey tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Monkey tennis?
Minor criticism, more distance between the eggs and the beans.
Monkey tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
You're like packing.
Basically, beef tea.
Yeah. Are you on an E?
Monkey tennis?
Can I have a glass of water, please?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.